If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Discover the story of the culture warrior, Don Wildman, and how he went head-to-head with Hollywood, Playboy, the homosexual agenda, and the Disney empire. The movement Don started paved the way for Christians to boldly stand for truth and righteousness in a hostile culture. Watch Culture Warrior today for free. Visit culturewarrior.movie.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman. As the announcer just told you, today's Thursday, August the 28th, 2025. In studio with me is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Brother Fred Jackson.
Good morning.
And in keeping with the brotherhood here, Ray Pritchard's in Kansas City. Good morning, Brother Ray.
Good morning, Brother Tim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, doing well. Why do Christians call each other brother and sister? How long does that go back?
Oh, it goes back to 2,000 years, all the way to the Bible, right?
Yeah.
Christians, we are in the family of God. If you have believed in Jesus, if you know him, everybody who knows Jesus is my brother and sister. Might be different denominations, certainly different languages, different cultures. But, Tim, we're part of a brotherhood and sisterhood, if you will, that stretches around the world.
That must seem strange to non-Christians or people who are not familiar with that, to hear people call each other that.
Well, and I think especially to the point Ray's making, one of the points he's making is that we have that link to people from completely different backgrounds, different cultures, different languages, different countries, and we're linked by that very unique faith.
Yeah, in Jesus and Christ. It's interesting, and it proves the Bible so that our our connection with each other through our faith in Christ supersedes everything else. So we are actually more of a brother with our brother in Christ than we are with our physical brother, our blood brother, oftentimes.
Right.
So that's the way that works. But as Ed and Fred said, and Ray said, this goes all the way back to the 2,000 years.
Yeah.
2,000 years of Christians being considered brothers and sisters to each other. I just remember when I was young, it seemed like younger. A lot younger, like childhood. I just seemed like we had more people calling each other back in the, sister so-and-so, brother so-and-so.
I'm doing it actually a lot the older I get because
you are?
I forget people's names.
Hi, brother. Hi, sister.
Hey,
brother. It works.
Yes, it does.
Huh? Hello, saint.
At church, we have a pretty good-sized church, so I'll just say, hey, brother.
I know. Yeah, you have to go with is that a pronoun? It is.
Brother? No, I don't think it's a pronoun. It's a noun.
It's just a noun, straight-up noun.
Yeah.
It doesn't even identify as a pronoun,
no,
does it?
No,
huh?
It doesn't.
So. It's just a regular noun.
Regular noun.
All right, Dr. Alex McFarland will be with us at the bottom of the hour, and we're having a little fun here to start the program, but it's a very sad day in Minneapolis and people in mourning there, Fred, because of what happened.
Yes, last evening there at this Catholic school in Minneapolis, there was a vigil to remember the two kids who were shot and killed by this guy. 17 others, 14 of the students at this Catholic school were wounded. We can report this morning that doctors at various hospitals in Minneapolis have done a remarkable job on those who were wounded. We are told that all of them will survive. But just a horrible experience. Just to review some of those who may have not heard the details, About this time, maybe a little earlier yesterday, they were just a few days into a new school year at this Catholic school in southern part of Minneapolis. And they were in a chapel service. They were holding a mass at this Catholic school. The kids were just coming in there. They were sitting in pews when a guy who we now know as 23-year-old Robin Westman, who identified as a female, we'll talk about more about that in a moment, he stood outside and began to fire a multitude of weapons, we're told, into that chapel.
Through windows?
Through windows.
Just indiscriminate.
Indiscriminate shooting. Okay. And two young kids passed away almost instantly. And as I say, 17 others, including 14 other kids, were wounded in all of this. Hundreds attended that vigil there last night. It is a scene almost that's reminiscent of the school shooting that we had in Nashville back a few years ago. And we're going to talk a little bit because in both cases, the shooter was a transgender. The authorities have taken down a video that this 23-year-old Robin Westman in the Minneapolis case, he made a video, posted it on X, and created a what's being called a manifesto as to where his thinking was in all of this.
I thought it was YouTube, or was it both?
I saw a copy of it on X.
Okay.
All right.
I just remember yesterday, excuse me for interrupting, but they said YouTube took it down.
Yes.
That's what made me think that.
Yeah. And again, some similarities to Nashville, you know, some manifestos disappeared all of a sudden. And because apparently some authorities don't want people to know that in both cases, it was a transgender individual. But this person in Minneapolis, 23-year-old Robin Westman, in this video, you can see the cache of weapons that he had. And on some of the weapons, some of the magazines, and he was spewing hatred against a whole group of people. Donald Trump was mentioned. And on one of the magazines of this high-powered rifle, he just wrote, ha, 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 on it. Anyway, so that's what we know.
Did he also write, this one's for the kids?
That he did say, this is for the kids, ha, 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 on one of the magazines.
Yes. So that's where we are. Because of this manifesto, we know that, and various excerpts of that, if you go to our coverage on AFN, in one of these videos, the shooter shows cache weapons, kill Donald Trump, and also, where is your God written on them, on these weapons.
He wrote, where is your God?
Where is your God? And then the New York Post is also reporting on this, saying he was tired of being transgender. He says, I only keep the long hair because it is pretty much my last shred of being trans. I'm tired of being trans. I wish I never brainwashed myself, he wrote, according to a translation by the Post. So a very...
Ray, this man, this young man, how old was he?
23.
And he killed himself.
Yes, he did.
After he finished shooting, he killed himself.
Yes.
What was wrong with this guy?
Well, there are two or three answers to the question, because I read part of the what you were talking about, Fred, yesterday before they took it down. We throw around the phrase deeply troubled, but here is a young man whose mind and heart was warped by what he had been through. I mean, he says he doesn't even want to be trans anymore. Yet he has the stuff on there, this is for the kids, ha, ha, ha. I think it shows two things. Number one, you can be truly mentally sick or mentally ill and still be morally culpable for right. what you do. And this young man was deeply troubled and mentally deranged and probably demonically inspired. And yet he planned it. He intended to do it. He went there, killed those kids, and then took his own life. About as evil an act as you can imagine, Tim.
CNN is reporting that the police chief there, and is it the police chief of Minneapolis proper?
Yes, his name is Brian O'Hara.
Okay. He's saying that the shooter tried to get inside the church and couldn't or didn't.
Oh, wow.
For some reason. So it could have been much worse had he been able to get inside the church with all the kids trapped in there. I say trapped, you know, all together in one place where he could actually see them. Was there been any report of security?
Well, some of the, I guess, instructors at the school took boards and ran them across the latches of some of the outside doors. So when this began to unfold, so that the doors could not be
pushed open. They were probably prepared in that way. I mean, that sounds planned.
Yeah. One of the kids who survived, he's 10 years old, he said they had practiced a possible shooter in the classroom environment.
Right.
But they had never practiced it in the chapel.
Right.
And maybe this guy, Westman, knew that the chapel was a vulnerability.
Well, because he had attended there before.
Well, I'm not sure that his mom worked there.
Okay, what I read was that he had attended there, but then left because he wanted to change his gender, and his mom signed off on that.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I don't know whether that's the reason why he left, but the only reason I'm mentioning it is he might have had firsthand knowledge of the schedule that they typically keep.
And he lived close by.
He did.
Evidently.
I was noticing on, I think this is down one of the feeds we have, the video feeds we have from the news. I think it's was MSNBC or maybe it was CNBC, that there are still media outlets claiming that there's still no motive being determined for this. I find that kind of hard to believe. Let me just say this, though. I want us to be fair. And I don't like it when the other side does this to Christians. This does not mean that all transgender people are this evil in terms of wanting to kill people. So I do want to say that. On the other hand, I was reading last night on X, people screenshotting some of the comments being made by people who were transgendered. And at least these individuals, that's why I'm being very careful not to put this on the entire basket of people who fit into the transgender identification. But these people were celebrating this murder, these murders and this attack.
Why?
Well, they were saying, good, so now straight people, straight parents can feel the pain that we in the transgender community feel when we are hated and abused. And this is, I was kind of stunned. Now, again, but this is, it winds up being anecdotal because these are screenshots of what people posted. But in my life, I never thought we'd reach the point where, and we see this increasingly on the left, politically speaking, with Trump, but I never thought I'd see people celebrating the murder of little children, and turning this into a cult, a part of the culture war.
All right, so I think we have to back up here, kind of along the lines of what you're talking about. It's helpful in to understand why somebody did something. That's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. However, as we always say, the individual is responsible themselves, not the group.
Right.
Okay. Right. So when Dylan Roof, was that his name in South Carolina?
Yeah,
went into the black church there and killed all those people because it was racially motivated, right? He was a white young guy. All right, so that was obviously evil, reprehensible, abhorrent, all the words you can think of, but he was responsible for his own actions.
Yes.
He didn't represent all white people.
Right.
If he did, I mean, but the liberal media, they take whatever their cause du jour is, and they really can't stand Republicans.
Yes.
And white people who are conservative. Okay. So anytime there was something like that, they say, see, this is motivated by white conservatism.
Yes.
Okay, our white Christianity. That's what they want to say. So they lump everybody in together as that's the reason for it. Yet when this happens on somebody on the left, like in this case the transgender, this guy was obviously mentally and spiritually messed up.
Right.
Okay. They don't even want to talk about that aspect, the angle that maybe it appears to be this guy who was Robert, who changed to Robin. He was motivated, he was messed up altogether, but the motivation may have been he hated Christians.
Right.
Okay. I mean, is that a far-fetched thing to think he went to a Catholic school and started mowing down innocent children, killing innocent children? So what was his motive? His motive was a hate crime. They don't even, liberal media don't even want to talk about that. You start talking about a hate crime against Christians, they want to flip it to gun control.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? That's
absolutely
what they want to talk about. Uh-huh. So, but when a violent act like this is committed by somebody who they would say is conservative, although we could parse that out,
yeah,
whether that's actually a legitimate claim or not, then it isn't gun control
right
so much. It's that they're a conservative.
Yes.
That's the reason.
It's their ideas that are at fault.
Right. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I want us to get, and then we can toss this back to Ray to get his take on this. But another thing that's kind of playing out in this, it for some reason, when we have these shootings here the last 3 or 4 years, we have heard people on the left get angry, Fred, when Christians say, let's pray for the survivors. And they seem to hate that. And they basically ridicule prayer for those people and imply that that's clearly not enough. And you have something with, was it Jen Psaki?
Jen Psaki, not only Jen Psaki, but the mayor of Minneapolis said much the thing as Jen Psaki said. You know, a lot of people, when in these incidents, they say our thoughts and prayers are right with those individuals. Well, yesterday, Jen Psaki, who was Biden's first White House spokesperson.
Circle back.
She now works, I think, still with MSNBC.
Mm-hmm. Highly rated show.
Yeah. She said, prayer is not freaking enough. Prayer does not end school shootings. Prayers do not make parents feel safe sending their kids to school. Prayer does not bring these kids back. Enough with the thoughts and prayers, end quote.
What does she propose we do? She say?
She wants to take away guns. I'm sure she didn't say it in that, but I'm sure that that's what she was thinking. Ray, this seems to more and more be the reaction from people on the left, many of whom, not all, many of whom have either no religious beliefs or they are hostile towards Christianity and want to insert their mockery of what Christians immediately do in situations like this. They want to pray and cry out to God and pray for the people because there's compassion in the heart of a Christian. And I don't know anybody who doesn't think, I mean, I've got grandkids in school. I think about the horror of this kind of thing happening. The immediate tendency for a Christian is to cry out for mercy and grace and comfort for those who have lost dear ones.
You know, Ed, a crisis brings out what is inside every human heart. This shocking event yesterday, of course, it's going to bring out in the hearts of Christians an enormous, overwhelming desire to cry out to God, to pray for those who were hit but not killed, that they might survive, that God would protect, that God would guide, that God would bring about healing inside that church and with the families. And we pray for the families of those two children that were murdered. Why wouldn't you do that? There's nothing more natural or normal for a Christian. And look, this is we're talking about a Catholic church, right?
Right.
I don't think there's any None of us are Catholics. Might be Baptists, could be Methodists, could be Presbyterians. Doesn't matter. At a moment like this, if you know the Lord and claim the name of Jesus, the most natural thing in the world is to cry out to God. And for Jen Psaki to say what she said, it's evidence of a hardness of heart, of a darkening of the heart, to say, almost to imply that enough, she said.
Enough with the prayers.
Enough with the prayers.
Like, you can't do more than one thing at a time.
That's
right. You can pray and you can talk about possible
and you can
solutions.
Come to the aid, and you can look at security, yeah. And you can look at could anything have been done to identify this young man?
Right.
You could do all that, and you should pray also. Like wise man said once, we can do many things once we have prayed. We can't do anything until we have prayed.
Yeah.
Prayer ought to be our first resort, not the last.
After spewing this, Jen Psaki I'm talking about, she put out another tweet, and I found this very interesting. She says, when kids are getting shot in their pews at a Catholic school mass, and your crime plan is to have National Guard put mulch down around D.C., maybe rethink your strategy.
What does that even mean?
That's her spectrum of hatred, I think. Frankly, she brings
Don. What does National Guardsmen in D.C. have to do with what happened in Minneapolis?
Absolutely nothing, Tim. But in her mind, they're all part of the problem. Donald Trump, these conservatives who talk about prayer and all this sort of thing. She lumps it all together.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, sometimes I can follow people I disagree with, at least their logic line.
Right.
But not this, not with that. That's
bizarre.
That's bizarre.
Because frankly, the argument over guns cuts both ways in a case like this. Okay, yes. Like you're saying, I can follow the logic of people. I don't agree with it. I can follow the logic with people on the left. Hey, if we had no guns, this wouldn't have happened. Okay? That's absurd. We all know that's
right.
But I can follow what they're thinking. No guns means this won't happen anymore.
Right.
Well, you know what? Since we're not going to get rid of guns, I would argue that having security or people with concealed carry in a church might be one of the solutions to preventing this from happening. Somebody who can shoot back, okay? But that's in probably a gun-free zone in Minneapolis, probably very difficult to get.
I'm sure the church carry. I'm sure the church itself is a gun-free zone.
Yeah, probably right.
So people who kill people with guns don't care about gun laws.
Yes.
How hard is that for liberals to understand?
Right.
Huh? Why don't they
and the evidence of that is in D.C. Since the National Guard went in, they have found more than 100 unregistered weapons.
2 days ago, it was 115.
Yes.
When they arrested criminals, they got guns from them that were illegally obtained.
Yes.
And that proves what conservatives always said about the Second Amendment is criminals will have guns.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what you do to law-abiding citizens.
Can I say something that sounds like despair? But I don't mean to sound this way.
Yeah.
But I'm only. Everybody knows you're not going to stop. We'll have another school shooting in a couple weeks, or another month, or 6 months, somewhere in America. We got 340 million people. You're going to have some nuts out there, some nut jobs.
Right.
And they're going to act out on their craziness or their evil, wicked
thoughts.
Oh, we're
going to have drive-by shootings, I'm sure. Plenty of them in big
cities
of America.
Today.
Over the weekend. Weekend.
I guess the wringing of the hands bothers me sometimes, especially when the left, when they go, we've got another school shooting. When is this ever going to stop? Until we get rid of guns.
Right.
Conservatives are against gun control. If we didn't have guns, I heard Harold Ford Jr., who I watch sometimes on The Five. I don't watch that show a lot, but he was saying the common denominator here is guns on all these. And I was going, well, the common denominator on car accidents are cars. I mean, I don't get what you're. Point is,
I have a concealed carry permit, and I keep my gun with me. It hadn't shot anybody.
Right, right.
It's not the gun, the person who's wielding it.
I think the left does that to distract from talking about spiritual things.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll be back momentarily.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist church VBS. Then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, yeah, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
We give thanks to God always for all of you, constantly mentioning you in our prayers, remembering before our God and Father your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Thessalonians 1:3.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Ray, we thank you for listening to AFR.
Nobody with more than one syllable is allowed on this
program.
Except Brent is our producer.
Brent's our producer. We do let Alex and Sandy on the show.
Oh, yeah, we do.
But they're not full-time. They're not qualified to be full-time hosts right here.
We have Cole. Cole Green is out there.
Oh, we could call Alex Al, I guess, maybe.
I had an Uncle Al.
I think that was a Paul Simon song.
I had an Uncle Al.
You did?
My dad's brother.
Okay.
Uncle Al.
What was he like? Did he leave you a lot of money?
Oh, man.
I mean, you know how...
No, why would he leave me money?
Well, you know how...
That was his nephew.
People always say your rich uncle died and left you a lot of money.
Now, there's no rich anything in the Battagliano lineage.
Well, rich and Battagliano, just... That doesn't go together.
It has been oil and water.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we've been talking about the tragic story out of Minneapolis yesterday and the media's coverage of it. And... joining us now is Dr. Alex McFarland, co-host of Exploring the Word with Brother Bert Harper each afternoon from 3 to 4 o'clock Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Alex.
Two-syllable name greetings from North Carolina.
Hey, by the way, is your name Alexander, or is it just... It is.
Actually, my first name is the same as my dad, Neil. So Neil Alexander McFarland. But Neil is a one-syllable word. I could go by that.
Yeah, I get
it. Well, so is that's not K-N-E-E-L, right? It's
No. No. N-E-I-L-L.
Oh, all right. Neil Alexander. That sounds like historic or something.
Well,
like,
it's almost Land on the Moon name.
Yeah, now, that's true. Neil Armstrong.
That's a fancy name for a chicken farmer, isn't it?
Okay, Alex, we've been talking, obviously, about what happened in Minneapolis yesterday. Yeah. Give us your thoughts.
Well, it's very sad. It's very sad. I mean, there's a lot to say, but, you know, one of the things that the left seems to always miss is human accountability. And, you know, Chuck Schumer and others instantly said, oh, this is another reason to ban firearms. Where is the call for personal accountability and telling our culture about morals and, yes, our accountability to God, you know?
Now, the one thing the left does make an exception, well, maybe two, but they do make an exception. You're right. They dismiss personal accountability. They blame the guns. Unless it's the police officer involved.
Right, right.
If a police officer is involved in an incident and it appears maybe the police officer was wrong or at fault, maybe, then they go, it's the cop's fault. Not well, the gun's fault.
That's a good point.
But the cop's fault. So it's the personal responsibility of the person.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the left, they omit personal responsibility when people break the law, but they invoke responsibility when police officers uphold the law.
That's true. But, why is that? Why do you think that is?
Well, before I answer that, let me say about, you know, Robert Westman or Robin Westman, this transgender shooter. He lived out his worldview. You know, the left, and I've had college students say this to me, you should live your truth. Well, this is a tragedy. It's unspeakably wicked what this young man did yesterday. I mean, it is, the only word is wickedness. This was objectively evil. But the left tells young people to live their truth. And he did. He lived out his worldview. Now, it's interesting, and I sent you guys that New York Post link where he regretted that he had, quote, brainwashed himself to believe in transgenderism. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the shooter some months ago in Tennessee, also at a Christian school, that shooter was transgender. But there's a lot to be said here. First of all, murder is wrong. The sixth commandment says, thou shalt not murder. God does give nations and individuals the right to self-defense, national defense, but that's not what this was. This was murder. You've got to understand, transgenderism is the ultimate form of moral relativism because, you know, it's one thing to say God can't tell me how to behave. Transgenderism says God can't even define what I am. It is just a militant autonomy. And this cognitive dissonance, this confusion, this delusion, and let's again say the left has encouraged, fostered, even subsidized this delusion called transgenderism. And it's very sad. And our nation, my prayer is that what somebody asked me on a radio show last night, what good could possibly come out of this? Well, if our nation will repent and turn back to God and acknowledge, and from the pulpits, the parents on down, if we tell all generations, but especially young people, look, there is right, there is wrong, and we will give an account to God. And human life is sacred, and none of us has the right to take human life as this murderer did. If a tragedy like this will finally convict us and cause us to turn back to God and moral truth, that's how this otherwise horrible thing could be redeemed.
Yeah. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Ray, you have a question for Alex, maybe? Or
yeah, Alex, I was just listening to what you said, especially the part there at the end. If God could use this to wake America up, and I'm thinking about the horror of it all. These Catholic Church kids at Mass, they're praying. It's almost the worst possible situation. I don't want to ask so much about this young man, Alex, but I want to ask about the whole transgendered movement. Sometimes, even in Christian circles, we talk about, well, it's just another choice people make. But I think there are elements of spiritual warfare here that the prince of darkness is at work. Could you say something about the demonic nature of what is happening in our world today?
Yes, Satan is real. Spiritual warfare is very real. A lot of people don't realize this, but among mental health professionals, there is an acknowledgement of demonic activity. Several years ago, I was asked to go to, I'm not being trite or anything like that, I literally was asked to go visit a woman in an insane asylum, and I did. And I went through a number of doors of security, and there was a lady that I actually, as far as I'm aware, she accepted Christ. She had enough presence of mind that I shared the gospel with this lady. But guys, I went to, in North Carolina, a facility for people that are clinically insane. And the spiritual heaviness was just palpable. But I was being briefed by a psychiatrist, and I had been, the family had asked me to see this lady, and he said, you know, Reverend McFarland, there are people here that are all sorts of situations and even probable demonic possession. And I asked this psychiatrist, I said, are you a Christian? And he said, well, no, I'm not really a religious person. And I said, but you believe in demonic possession. And this psychiatrist said to me, and we had a very lengthy discussion, he said, well, there are certain things that there's just no other explanation. And guys, I know we don't have time to fully explore this, but let me just say, I had an unbelievably deep conversation with a PhD psychiatrist who was not a Christian. And he said, and he referred me to a number of journal articles where among people that are diagnosed as clinically insane, there are certain things that have been observed that are only explainable in spiritual terms. Now, what am I saying here, folks? Look, Satan has attacked the image bearers. Imago Dei, we are made in the image of God. Satan could not kill God, so he has tried to harm and dehumanize and debase those that are made in God's image. Do you know, and so guys, all murder is really, you know, I'm going to put it this way. Every murder of human life is really a manifestation of the killer's malice against the giver of life, God.
Yeah. That's why, you know, the Bible is clear on the, you just say God handed down the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. One of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not murder.
Right.
Yeah. So, do you know, guys, let me ask it. I would say among the left, just even pragmatically, even if, and guys, I remember April of 99, I was on the road speaking when the Columbine shooting went down. And I was interviewed by a local radio station in Asheville, North Carolina. And I said, you know, why can't we tell young people about God and moral truth? And they say, oh, because that would violate the First Amendment. No, it would not. And that's another story. The man that wrote the First Amendment, Tim, I've at more than 100 universities, I've asked audiences, who wrote the First Amendment? I've yet to get an answer. It was a man named Fisher Ames, by the way, A-M-E-S. And Fisher Ames, who wrote the Non-Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, he said, I would that the Bible be taught in all public schools, for it is the best vehicle for teaching morality to young people. And I've asked a number of audiences, how do 21st century secularists know more about the application of the First Amendment than the man that wrote the First Amendment?
Yeah.
Even pragmatically, even if you didn't believe in God or Christianity, what would be the harm in telling young people that human life is sacred? And maybe they would treat it as such.
Yeah, I think a lot of those people, they just hate God.
They just
hate God. You know, Trump derangement syndrome?
Right.
It's God derangement syndrome.
Yeah.
They just hate God. GDS. They don't care if some of it's good. They just can't stand the idea of submitting their lives to a higher authority.
To answer Alex's question, what would be wrong in telling young people that life is sacred? Well, if you're going to say life is sacred, you have to translate life is holy, and then you have to eventually work your way back to God. And they refuse to do that because of their hostility to him.
Right. All right, Alex, so your summer camps are over now?
Summer camps are over. Okay. We had over 300 salvation decisions among teenagers. Glory to God. But and then last Thursday night, a week ago today, we had almost 2,000 people from 17 states that came to hear Charlie Kirk. And I just want to say how much I appreciate the work of this evangelist is so augmented by the microphone of AFR And Tim, I'm deeply grateful.
Okay, you're talking third person there, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I just want to make clear people third understood person. What I understood what you were doing, but I want to make yes. sure.
Well, and I want to make it clear, Ed understood what okay. he was saying.
Okay, well, there you go, Ed. Ed
Bob Dole never said that.
Say Bob Dole. Yeah.
Bob Dole.
Do you remember
okay.
that?
Yes. Oh, yeah, Bob Dole. He talked in third person. All right, so Tim says, have a great day, Alex, and we look forward to hearing you and Bert this afternoon.
God bless you all.
Okay,
That's Neil Alexander McFarland.
McFarland joining us from North Carolina. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening to AFR. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Ray. I wanted to get to a couple more stories before the hour's up. Namely, this story. Yesterday, the mayor of the District of Washington, D.C., held a news conference.
Mm-hmm.
And she was going over the statistics since President Trump initiated a federal takeover, so to speak, of law enforcement in the nation's capital, which he has the constitutional authority to do because it is the one and only federal city that we have. That's why it's called the District of Columbia. And it was pretty amazing because she's a liberal Democrat, mm-hmm. and yet she's giving the numbers for how President Trump's, use of the National Guard is changing her city. Go ahead, Fred.
And less than 3 weeks ago, she was opposed to it.
Yeah.
She didn't want those soldiers there.
Mayor Browser. Yeah. That's her name.
We don't know it. But yesterday, she was singing
to her credit.
Yep. Singing a different tune. Cut three.
And we greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what MPD has been able to do in this city. The difference between this period, this 20-day period of this federal surge and last year represents a 87% reduction in carjackings in Washington, D.C.
Gee,
that was just part of what she said.
Yes.
Let me read a quote here from her. She said, this is Mayor Browser. Again, she is she will now be tarred and feathered or whatever, stoned or whatever by her.
She's off the Christmas list.
her fellow liberal Democrats will never forgive her for what she said yesterday. She said, we greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what PD, the MPD, that's the Metro Police Department, has been able to do in this city. Then she said, for carjackings, the difference between this period, this 20-day period of federal surge and difference between that and last year represents an 87% reduction in carjackings. It's sad when you've got to have percentages related to carjackings.
Yes.
Because usually you would say, well, we had two carjackings last year. No, there's so many that in Washington, D.C., they have to have percentages. How much it's dropped. But she said, we know that when carjackings go down, when use of guns go down, when use of gun goes down, when homicide or robbery go down, neighborhoods feel safe and are safer. So this surge has been important to us for that reason. So I just say kudos to her for just telling the statistical truth about how the President Trump's actions have made her city safer.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how long you could sustain this, because how long can President Trump use the National Guard for these purposes?
Well, Eight said 30 days, right?
30 days.
Okay, but then can you renew it?
Yes, Congress. Okay. I think Congress has to do something.
They can renew it?
Yeah.
Well, I would think if the mayor of the city requests it, as well as the president, the Congress would have no choice but to go along with the request. Ray, any thoughts on this?
You know, once again, President Trump gets attacked. He takes action, could care less what his critics say. He does something. And in this case, once again, he has been entirely vindicated. Tim, to think about, I heard what you said about the percentage. It just means things were not just bad. They were awful in Washington. And I would say, wouldn't you think, Tim, an 87% decrease, that's pretty good proof that it worked.
Yeah.
And there's been, am I wrong in saying there have been
no murders?
No murders. Yeah. So for this same period compared to last year, it's 100% drop.
Yeah.
I think everybody
with a brain knew that this was going to happen. The numbers, the crime is going to go way down, at least temporarily, because the presence of the National Guard and other law enforcement agencies there all over the streets will prevent a lot of crime itself. But again, how long they can maintain that presence, we'll see. But
you know, I've heard these mayors of, you know, the governor of Illinois, mayor of Chicago, stay away. We don't want
right.
you. Even here in Kansas City, our leaders are making the same kind of noise. It would seem to me that you would want these kind of results. Okay, so within 30 days, no murders, an 87% drop in various kinds of crime, that's unbelievable. Think what that could do in Chicago. Now, look, I know it's not a federal city, but think,
yeah,
guys.
But they could use the same. Yeah, I'm sorry, but they could use the same idea.
Right.
And do it. The governor of the state of Illinois could call out the National Guard.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be President Trump. Go ahead, Fred. You had something
to say? Yeah, well, speaking of these mayors, Brandon Johnson of Chicago, Michelle Wu of Boston, and Karen Bass of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Have a listen to what they're saying about this. Cut number four.
We are rejecting the occupation by the military of our cities. That's actually fighting for our democracy. That's what's required in this moment. When we fight back against tyranny, the people united will always prevail.
Stop attacking our cities to hide your administration's failures. We will not back away from our community that has made us the safest major city in the country.
We need the National Guard to assist us and prepare for fire season, not for an inappropriate development, inappropriate deployment, where they are just guarding a building that is not under attack.
It was really interesting. Governor Pritzker of Illinois, he led reporters on a little tour of certain areas of Chicago yesterday, and he said, look, there's hardly any crime here.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Follow me.
Here in this little area here, they didn't have any carjackings. However, the city reported 573 homicides in 2024, the most of any U.S. city that year.
Well, that's just people who got shot and killed or knifed to death, but that doesn't include all the casualty or
yes.
people who were injured or
yes.
gang violence and,
yes.
and
well, let me just say that kind of thinking reminds me when my daughter was a little girl, and this is the first time this had ever happened, so she did not understand that parents aren't fooled. She's supposed to clean up her room, and then she came to get me, and I walked in, and her room was pristine, not a toy in sight. And I walked over to the closet and opened the door, and that's where everything was stashed.
And it all fell out.
And it, on cartoons, everything would fall out. And that is what I think of when you have the mayor of Chicago leading the media around to show, see, no crime over here. Well, where's the closet? Where's all this stuff stashed? Because a lot of people are suffering because of crime in this city.
Oh, my.
But anyway, good for the mayor of Washington, D.C.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, me too. Have a press conference, and she's lauding the efforts of the National Guard that President Trump has put in Washington, D.C., our federal city.
And let me just say one last thing about if the deployment of the National Guard to bolster the MPD, okay, the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C., is leading to this kind of decrease in crime, then what you were doing before is not working.
Yeah.
You're going to have to change what you're doing, which is probably to bolster the numbers of people in the MPD. It's putting criminals away when they commit crime, not releasing them back on the street, and not letting them get away with having a rap sheet 13 or 14 crimes along.
Well, I don't think, despite the comments there from the mayors of Chicago, Boston, and Los Angeles, President Trump's not going to send the National Guard into those cities. As Abe said yesterday, Abraham Hamilton III, he doesn't have the constitutional authority
right.
to do so, not unless the mayor or the governor of the state said, Mr. President, help us for some particular reason, you know, a national disaster, I mean, a natural disaster or some kind of, or, you know, some kind of riots going on, and they need help for a particular moment in time. But so he's not going to do that. Now, does President Trump troll? Yes, he's master. He's a master troller.
He's the king of troll.
He's the king of troll. So he'll say something that he doesn't intend to do just to have these people. I don't agree with doing that, by the way, as president of the United States. But
especially with other nations.
That's the way he rolls.
Like making Canada the 51st state. I'm not just saying that because Fred's here.
Well, but Trump will say something like this. Like he went after the governor of Illinois for not taking crime seriously in Chicago. And then he adds, and he also needs to go to the gym.
Yeah.
Like that fat boy needs to step back.
Needs
from the,
to eat a salad and
he needs
don't
to eat a salad. And the governor. So you get into that kind of spit bat when you Trump, you got to take it's.
I like
you know,
that spitz bat.
Spitz bat.
Yeah.
And then he then the governor of Illinois says, oh yeah, that's a pot calling the kettle black, so to speak. That's what he didn't say exactly that, but anyway. Yeah. So with Trump, that's what you get, man. You just get.
But this what he's done in D.C. is a home run, and it like we've been saying, it's a temporary fix. And when these troops go home, law and order will return to its prior levels.
What I've learned is basically with Trump, and I think we've all learned this by now. And he can't be president again, so he really doesn't care. he never did care,
right,
but
he
never did really care. But he doesn't care. He couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Than he does right now about how he talks or is interpreted. But with Trump, his policies you cheer for.
Yes.
The vast majority of the time.
Right.
Now, sometimes he'll, but his childish antics, which come out every few days, you just go, you don't need to talk to Rosie O'Donnell. Okay?
Right.
Anyway, we all know that's how it goes.
Yeah.
So, unique individual, to say the least, as serving as president of the United States.
Yes.
We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.